The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Here we are with continuing with the Eightfold Path. And today it's the fourth factor, which is a right action, sammakammata. And it's in introducing this very important one, because really action means how we act in the world, what we do. It's action is really central to the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha was said to be a teacher of action, that how we act, what we do is so consequential. And so to be the caretakers of our action, to do it wisely and considerately, it's a really important part of it. And the fact that the Buddha considers what we do with the mind to be action as well, there's really no way of getting around action. And so how do we act? What activities are we involved in, body, speech, and mind, that are for our benefit, that bring peace and well-being? So I want to take, as I start this right action, next few talks, usually has to do with the precepts, and I'll say more about that in a few minutes. But I want to talk about just kind of the trajectory, the unfolding of the Eightfold Path. There is a logic, there is a process, there is a kind of a flow, a psychological, psychophysical flow that is set in motion with right view, that we're following along the stream. And to understand that logic or that flow, it maybe is helpful. And so at the very heart of what the Buddha's teaching is this freedom from suffering. And that's kind of the enterprise, that's kind of the orientation which everything is being understood. If a person wants to be free of suffering, then it's helpful to have the right view, the right understanding. And there are two types. One is the wisdom side, and the other is the liberation view. And both of them lead in the same direction. The wisdom side is often what we acquire from books and teachers. It's like an understanding. It's what we have to believe to some degree. And Buddhism doesn't require you to believe in rebirth, to believe in heavens and supernatural kind of things. It does require provisional belief that our actions make a difference. And the actions set the conditions in place for how things will unfold for us. And so if we want to be the custodian of our well-being, we have to care for our actions and what we do. And there are those actions which are wholesome and those which are unwholesome, those which are helpful and not helpful. And so we choose the one that are wholesome and helpful. And the rest of the Eightfold Path is a description of the wholesome, healthy actions in which to be engaged in. And so we then pick up those. If we were just learning from the Buddha, then we go on to the next one, the right consideration. We consider. It's helpful to consider things from the point of view of not getting caught in sensual addiction, kind of a simplicity of being, a renunciation of those. It's good to be involved in non-ill will, and the corollary of that is goodwill, is to live with friendliness and kindness. And it's healthy and wholesome to live harmlessly, to not cause harm. And that the corollary of that is to consider a life of living that's compassionate and caring. So this is the kind of the wisdom side. We take this on and we take on these practices and learn from the Buddha. This is what's wholesome. This is what's helpful. From the liberation side is to practice deeply enough to begin understanding that there is freedom. The heart can be free. The mind can be free. Of its attachments, its clinging, of the causes of suffering. And that, you know, it's like when the heart sings and is completely open and soars like a free bird in the sky, to really be free. And when it has that sense of freedom, we experience that, then there's a different reference point for the Eightfold Path. From a clear enough, I like to say, embodied experience of freedom, a direct experience of it, now there's a whole different understanding of what's possible. And now, the reason to not be caught up in sensual desires, be caught up in ill will, or caught up in causing harm, vihimsa, cruelty, sometimes it's said, is because it diminishes our freedom. We lose our freedom in being involved in those, because those are addictive behaviors. They're compulsive. There's a loss. There's a closing down. The heart doesn't sing in this, or flood us. The heart doesn't soar and fly in those activities. And feeling how it causes suffering for ourselves to be involved in sensual addictions, ill will, and cruelty, the movement is to start finding out how to not do that, how to pick up and be involved in other things. Those movements are so deep inside of us sometimes to cause harm that we don't want to cause more harm by being critical of ourselves for doing so. But we want to learn how to step away and look at that whole thing with more freedom, with more openness, with more compassion and care, so we're not picking it up and fueling it and continuing it. So having some sense of freedom on the liberation path of the Eightfold Path, there, you know, when you have some experience of freedom, that freedom then is brought to bear on the unhealthy, unwholesome motivations we might have. Hold ourselves free from them. Don't get involved. And then, so we see that the right consideration, the second factor, is intimately connected to not causing harm to ourselves and to others. And then we want to, with that consideration, with that reference point, that has a lot to do with how we speak. And so we want to be careful with our speech and speak in kind, supportive, truthful ways. And then we come to our actions, what we actually do and behave with our body in the world. And here the Buddha gave four descriptions or definitions of what right action is. And these four are very important for the monastic community because they relate to the four most serious rules for Buddhist monastics. These are so serious that if a monastic violates their first four rules or precepts, they are automatically no longer a monastic, and they can never become a monastic again. So for a monastic, that's to they're not to kill, they're not to in any kind of way steal, not to take what's not given, not be involved in any kind of sexual behavior, they're celibate, and not to lie. And so these are so important for monastics. For lay people, those four are, three of them are the same, not to kill, not to steal, not to take what is not given, not to, but for lay people, the third one is not to engage in sexual misconduct as opposed to celibacy. And then the fourth is the same, not to lie, not to tell falsehoods. So rather than seeing these as being, excuse me while I clear my throat, instead of seeing these as being moralistic in some kind of abstract principle kind of way, that we're taking on from outside of us rules of how to live, ideally we see it as these are movements towards non-harming. And we see how wise it is to not cause harm, and how much it's part of our movement towards liberation not to cause harm. And so the context is not obligatory. It's not this oppressive kind of feeling of someone looking over your shoulder that you have to do it this way. But if what you want is to life that doesn't cause harm to self or others, if what you want to do is to preserve the real freedom that we've discovered, then it's really helpful to avoid killing or causing harm. Avoid stealing, avoid sexual misconduct, and avoid lying. Well, actually, lying has already been covered by the third factor, right speech. So the Buddha actually, when he defines right action, he limits it to those three. right. I was a little bit wrong before. So not steal, not killing, not stealing, and no sexual misconduct for monastics, celibacy. And what's interesting here is that the fifth precept is not covered in the Eightfold Path. The precept to not engage in intoxication, drugs or alcohol, are not mentioned in the Eightfold Path whatsoever. And that's because alcohol and drugs belong to a different category. They can cause a lot of harm to be involved in them, but not necessarily so. And so if the main thrust of really living a harmless life, the emphasis is really this close in for, this kind of thorough, if we want to be thorough on this, we want to relate it and do it with areas of our life where really clearly 100% have to do with causing harm and then avoiding doing that. So the first one, not to kill, the Pali expression is not really, it can be not to kill breathing beings. Or not, it's a little bit more, can also mean simply not to harm or not to strike. So you wouldn't even punch someone out. You don't want to cause any injury to anyone. And it's not just people, but it's anything that's breathing. And so how thorough do we want to live our lives in that level of harmlessness? Do we, do we kill animals and birds and insects and pests that we have? How complete do we want to be? How careful do we want to be? Buddhist monastics are supposed to be so careful that they don't want to kill anything in the ground, so that they're not actually allowed to do any gardening or farming, because their spade going into the ground might kill worms and things in the ground. And it's not so much that they don't supposed to kill the plant, but they're not supposed to kill the animals and what breathes in the soil. So how thorough do we want to be? Take this precept of not killing. And that's a very personal answer that everyone has to grapple with. Sometimes it's for lay people, it becomes a question, where is the least harm? So if, for example, we have termites eating our home, where is the least harm? Is the least harm in killing the termites? Or is there least harm in letting the termites eat our house and beginning to destroy everything for us? There's a kind of a, for lay people, there's much more complex consideration about this and trade-offs that have to be given. And it's kind of unfortunate to live this way, but it seems to be part of the lay human life. And the monastic life can allow for a much thorough going kind of dedication to non-harming. But for lay people, how do we find the balance? How do we find the right way to engage and live this life? And I don't have good answers for that. What I love is that when people come to me and say, what about here? What about the insects? What about the gophers in my garden? I need food for my family. Or what about this and that? I'm kind of reluctant to answer for them and tell them what I think. But I love the fact that they're asking the question and finding their way with this and making the best choice, knowing that there is maybe always going to be a trade-off, and we have to decide where that trade-off is in extreme situations. The insects and animals and euthanasia and assisted suicide and all these kinds of questions. We have to kind of find our way by ourselves. But there are some areas that Buddhism, I think, is categorical around not killing. We don't kill human beings. And so it's very, very few times that Buddhism comes down. I think the Buddha comes down in a so categorical way. We don't kill people. And so for the Buddha, then, I think there'd be no capital punishment. For the Buddha, there would be no going to war and all kinds of questions that, all kinds of orientations or dedications that just raise a whole bunch of questions and considerations and protests and all kinds of things. What I like to emphasize here is that this first precept, first right action, not to kill, is a subject of deep reflection, contemplation, consideration. And regardless of what we decide to do, how we live our lives around this not killing thing, can we really base our choice, our decision, on the second factor of the Eightfold Path? Can we base it on the consideration for non-addiction to sensual pleasure and comfort, non-involvement with ill will, and non-involvement with cruelty? And even better, can we really base it on right view? And one I most favorite is the movement of freedom. Can we base whatever choice we make to really safeguard the deepest, most wonderful place of freedom that can exist in our own heart, to not give that up? So whatever we do with this precept of not killing, in terms of, you know, animals and pests and things like that, can we really have as a reference point to something deeper inside of us, where we're really safeguarding the highest quality of heart, of mind, of well-being that a person can have? The Buddha's teaching is a radical teaching of radical non-harming for self and others. So the first of the right actions is not harming, and tomorrow I'll talk some about not taking what is not given, and then following sexual misconduct. So thank you, and may this day be a day that you reflect and explore and consider the thoroughness in which you would like to practice non-harming in your life. And maybe you'll go out into the world and practice more non-harming in speech, in body, and in mind. So, thank you.